Okay, we're going to start the meeting at 7:31 PM. And I'm going to appoint Kawan for Arlene. And I'm going to appoint Diane for Steve Clark. Okay, the next item of business is approval of the minutes.
I have a question on the dollar store plantings of the barn that we were talking about before. It said something about that a decision would have to be made within 60 days.
We have to respond to the request for bond release. We can say no.
Okay, but that's why it's on the, okay, fine.
So it says the consensus of the commission is not to take any action on the release of the bond until spring when the plantings can be reviewed.
That's neither yes nor no.
Yeah, I have a question about that. Why would, I thought the bond was $5,000 when we mentioned it before, but the bond that we're doing, is it the same one tonight for 15?
So we will get into that under old business 4A. What you're doing okay. Right now is just reviewing the minutes from what actually happened at the meeting last time.
Okay. Sorry.
No, it's okay.
I'd like to make a motion that we adopt the minutes.
1 second.
Motion Marilee Manning. Second Jeremy Flick. I'll call the roll, Kawan.
I will abstain since I was not in the capacity at that time.
Okay. And Diane was not, also was not. Marilee?
Aye.
Jeremy?
Here.
Jim Crockley?
Aye.
Tom Robbins?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye.
So it's 5 in favor, 0 opposed, 2 abstentions.
Correct.
Thank you.
Staff reports. Next item.
Just general meeting with people working on this codification. From my end, it's been kind of light in the office, which is kind of nice after the holidays, but not a lot going on. We haven't met with anybody seriously that I can think of coming in to do anything. There's been a lot of interest in some properties that are for sale, but nothing serious that I can think of.
And Mike.
So I don't know if you want to do this now or if you want to kind of go through some of the other agenda items first, but I had kind of as a follow-up have a couple of slides that I put together regarding some of the higher density affordable housing projects that we talked about a while back. So we can run through those now or later.
I think we can do that now.
Okay. Let me...
Should be able to share, Mike, hopefully.
All right. Yep. I'm going to try to. I'm calling this a field trip because that's sort of what it felt like once I was done putting it together. going to see if presenter view. All right, so we've talked about this in some of these slides you've seen before, but I tried to put them together in a bit of a linear fashion so that it at least can start a conversation and we can see what kind of comes from that. So the first thing that I wanted to just kind of touch on, I pulled some of these from the Partnership for Strong Communities survey of Bolton from 2022, or their profile. So just to kind of set the table, 3% of the housing stock in Bolton is multifamily, 97% single family, obviously. 34% of renters in Bolton are cost burdened, which means they spend more than they should per month on housing costs. And that is viewed as generally somewhere in the neighborhood of 30%. And this means they don't typically have room for things in the budget, such as childcare, groceries, car repairs, et cetera. So that is a number that they watch. Likewise, 22% of owners in Bolton are cost burdened. For 2022, the housing wage is $25.04 an hour, which is approximately $52,000 a year, which basically they define the housing wage as the amount of money you need to make to be able to pay for a two-bedroom apartment in Bolton and not be overly cost-burdened. The median age in Bolton is 46, and the projected population change between now and 2040 is a 20% reduction. That's a little bit higher than some of the sort of towns around, but it's most towns that you see are projected to decrease in size. I think Bolton has seen since 1990 a 40 or 41% decrease in building permits, which again is not uncommon. But things are a little bit more expensive than they should be. Population, as we know, just like Connecticut, is aging and also declining, which is certainly something long-term that we want to think about. So to kind of go through some of these and a few of them you've seen, these are projects that I'm highlighting that are on septic. So the idea is just to give you a sense of what has been done elsewhere. Obviously, the market is different in different places in Connecticut. So I'm not saying that if we like these, we can just go to the store and buy one and ask the developer to put one up. But it just kind of shows you that certain things are possible. I've included as much information as I could find from some of the metrics. But, you know, there's limited stuff available. We can dig in further if need be. So this is Saybrook Station. I think you've seen this one. It's 186 units. 38 of them are affordable, deed restricted. This was an 8-30G application with the town. Old Saybrook is very open about what they call friendly 8-30G applications. So they basically welcome developers to submit through this process, which, as you probably know from the affordable housing plan, is basically a complete sidestep from the land use approval procedure that we're all used to. If a project has deed restricted affordable units, they do not need to meet the zoning requirements, setbacks, density, height, design, parking, sidewalks, landscaping. The only thing they need to do is meet basically public safety requirements and building and health code. and that was a process adopted in the late 70s by the state because they felt that many communities in Connecticut were becoming exclusive and housing was not attainable. So the town processes this as a traditional site plan application, and they just essentially ignore the design criteria rather than flipping the process on its head and making the application go basically through and doing zone changes and going to court, et cetera. It was constructed in 2017. They pay 1.2 for the property. It's just over 10 acres. So this is equates to about 17 units an acre. And I was looking at some of the construction costs and appraisal costs. So you'll see those there. But if I go to the next slide quickly, you'll see the layout of the site. The only reason I put this in here, and it's a little bit hard to see, I don't think I can, let me see. I'm not sure if it'll let me. I zoomed in, hopefully a little bit, it's blurry, but in the upper left-hand corner in the triangle there, that is the treatment system that was built for the project. So that is how they are dealing with the affluent. There is no sewer in Old Saybrook, period, which is why I've looked at them for a couple of examples. So this whole development is run through this treatment system here. And that was...
So my question is, how does what does DEEP have to say about a system like this?
So this project, because of the size, this was approved by DEEP. It was beyond the threshold of being something that the local health department could approve. So they went to DEEP for approval.
Thank you.
This is another project in Old Saybrook. This is called Hanford Commons. This is three buildings. I couldn't get the full site plan, so you'll see two of them there. The one in the middle here is 99, I think it's Lindy, which is sort of in the center of the page or to the left of the lower photo. Another 8-30G application. It's mixed use. So they got a special permit for the commercial portion and then came in 8-30G for the housing. It's 14 units total, 5 affordable, 3 total buildings. And is about 0.79 acres. So they're approximately 17 units an acre, per density, fully on septic, as I mentioned, and, appraisal $1.99 million. This is just over in Essex. This is called Essex Place, 22 units, all affordable. The lower photo shows sort of an earlier phase, a somewhat older phase of the Housing Authority project. And then the building in the back is the newer phase. 23 units on 0.96 acres, or sorry, 22 units on 0.96 acres is about 23 units an acre. I couldn't get some of the other values there, but we'll talk more about the construction costs when we get to the end. Again, fully on septic. Go to the next slide.
Is that a DEEP septic, Mike, or don't you know?
I don't think this one had to go because of the size. Okay. But I didn't have the specs on that system.
Yep, no worries.
This is Essex Station, basically in the backyard of the one we just saw, 52 units, again, 8-30G, 3¾ acres, 13.8 units an acre, constructed fully on septic. And so you'll see in the lower photo here, you know, they got three buildings and they split this up so that there are three separate parcels here. That allowed them to sidestep the state approval process for septic because they had one building and one septic on each parcel. That doesn't conform to traditional zoning regulations, which is why the 8-30G process worked for them, because they were able to basically skip setbacks and other design criteria. So that project obviously is commonly owned, but by creating the separate parcels, it made the approval process a bit easier. So kind of shifting gears a little bit, one of the things that we've talked about, or I've talked about with many of the towns and commissions that I work with, is about sort of how you get there. And one of the periods that I'd like to put at the end of this sentence is that arbitrary density caps and the commission establishing density without a project on the table is not realistic. You don't know the project. We don't know the soils. We don't know the parcel, the design, the type of construction. And so there's a town nearby within, you know, 10 minutes of Bolton that has a zone that allows for high density housing. They had a developer show up and say, I'd love to build, presented plans, presented everything. And the commission effectively arbitrarily said, we like the project, but we really want to keep the density to X. So we're going to allow this to go forward, but with a density of X. And he said that that density doesn't work. The construction costs don't make sense and the project never happened. And it was an arbitrary decision. So what's in front of you is a section of a use table from one of the sections of the zoning regs in Willington, which is not the town I was just talking about, where we did some tweaks to the regs, and you'll see here highlighted in red, we are allowing by special permit multifamily dwellings of five or more units based upon soil capacity. So they go out and do soil testing, work with the health district. They prove to us that they have the ability to have a system that'll support X number of bedrooms. And then through the special permit process, we work with them to get that approved. We don't want to put those caps on it because density looks very different based upon the type of development. Something else that I thought was interesting, and again, I think I touched on this. This is a feasibility study for a TOD, a conceptual TOD project for a town in Hartford County along the fast track, which I cannot name because the study's not final yet. But one of the things they looked at is, again, the feasibility of construction costs and how you look at mixed use and building densities and heights, et cetera. And what they ended up finding is that there's basically a loss in value. In that the construction and development costs and all of what's required equates to approximately $350, $340 a square foot. And the residual cost of the project once the building is done is not close to that. And so what that means is there's a significant amount of risk for a developer, because once the project comes online, it isn't worth what he just paid. Which is a challenge. This is in a place where real estate has stronger value because of proximity to fast track. So this was something that was concerning, but I thought it was interesting. So I threw it in here just to kind of pique your interest or provide some thoughts for discussion. This is something that I have sort of still a work in progress, but I threw it in here just again, because I thought some of the data was interesting. This is a number of developments, many of which we just looked at. It lists all the information. It kind of shows the units, densities, size, and then some of the values associated with that and the number of units. I have slides on all the other ones, but they're not on septic, so I didn't provide them. But again, it is, I think, quite interesting to look at the difference between some of these buildings and what they look like as far as density is concerned and how big they are, but also, you know, the construction costs, right? Saybrook Station, which was the largest one that we looked at first, it's a $25 million project, and that was in 2016. So there's a huge amount of investment associated with this and risk. And so, you know, we really want to certainly think about how we can reduce barriers to these things if the commission is actually interested in teeing some of this stuff up. It's not to say that if you do all the right things, it'll happen. But, you know, it's certainly, I think, worth considering that pulling some of the levers that the commission can to make this easier should some of these come before you. With that, I'll take a breath, and if you have any questions, hit me.
Mike, Kim Cropley. So when those projects were completed, were they 100% rented right away? Or is it something that a developer worries about that it's not, and they're going to be vacant? Because that would even be an added cost.
I know that the two Essex developments and the Saybrook development were waitlisted. They're not having any trouble. The Essex project, the developer wished that he was able to get more units. And actually what he learned was that the two bedroom units go faster and are more desirable. People like them more because they want an office or they have a child or a family member. So he would have changed the ratio, but not having any trouble renting them.
Thank you.
Mike, I actually have a question myself. So I just want to pivot back to septic. So is there any general guidance in terms of maintenance scheduling for these type of construction multifamily construction projects?
So all of the ones that I've shown you were in the rental format. So they're managed by an overarching entity that owns the building and would deal with all of those maintenance things, just like a traditional apartment.
Okay.
You can have an ownership side to the affordable housing where it would basically limit the sale price or the cost of the building. In practice, that tends to not work as well because if you can only sell the property for a certain amount of money, you may not be as interested in doing things like spending $25,000 on siding or a roof. So I think on the ownership side, the maintenance can be a little bit more of a concern, but I don't see that for the rentals.
On the ownership side, Mike, wouldn't it run like a condo though, where you'd have an association and no matter which unit you're maintaining, it would get the same amount of maintenance? The problem, I think, would be I don't know how you dole out the monthly or the yearly condo fee or whatever, and how that would affect if you had like a percentage of them were affordable units and the rest were market value. I don't know how if they adjust the rate for the annual fee or not. I don't know how that works.
It's weird. The one that I'm most familiar with is a project that was done, I don't know, maybe 30, 20 or 30 years ago in Newington. And it's like a very small single family detached development. And they cap the purchase price or and sale price basically at 115%. And so they look at the income of the person buying to determine if they fall within the income eligibility. But because the purchase price is capped, so that it doesn't get out of whack. Because if it, I guess if it were to go with the market, you'd basically, if the market expanded like we saw during COVID, it would basically go beyond the 30% of the AMI. But the problem is if people can only make 15% or whatever their purchase, they just defer as much maintenance as possible. So it's looking a little, it needs a little love at this point, shall we say.
It's almost better to have a rental situation if you can get it.
I think so.
And it's also something we don't have a lot of in Bolton is rental units.
Yeah. And I guess the only other thing that I would touch on, and again, the hard part is you need a little bit of a market and in some demand to create that. But the other option that's on the table is inclusionary zoning, which is we've talked about, which is where you require affordable housing to be built as part of the development. So, any high density housing project that would come in, you would require them to deed restrict a percentage of the units. As part of that, you can allow them to opt to pay you a fee in lieu of those units. And so they might say, it's not within our management structure. We're not set up to actually do this income vetting every year, and we don't want to manage it. So we'd rather just pay you the fee and you can create the units yourself. There's a section of the statutes which allows for it. The town creates a special fund, the money gets deposited into that account, and you use that to purchase additional units, construct units, buy down deed restrictions, provide renovations to existing units, and you would set that fee calculation. So in the area that you're familiar was recently approved, but I don't believe it's under construction. Right in on King Hill in Mansfield and the UConn campus basically is what's called the hub. It's several hundred units of basically it's basically a private dorm. It might be 527 units, five stories. Mansfield has an inclusionary zoning requirement. They just bumped it to 20%, 15% of the total units for the development. And the developers on that project happily paid Mansfield $3.2 million, I believe, to not have to include those within their development. So that on top of some of the other recent projects, they probably have between $4 and $5 million bucks that will be in their account that they can use for future projects. Even though it's a lot of money, it, you know, if they're paying for 10 units, they're probably skipping out on 12 or 15. So it still saves the developer money. But I mean, that is a viable tool that can, you know, give the town some flexibility on how those units are created.
Excuse me.
Right?
It would probably go under like Eastern Highlands or something. It'd be like a conglomerate.
Sorry, I missed the first part of that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wouldn't we have to have a Bolton Housing Authority kind of thing?
That's most frequently how it's done. You're not obligated by the statute to have a housing authority. You could take that money, and I'm just going to use this as an example because it's one we're familiar with. You could use that money and you could go to Mr. Bugnacki, who just came in to build those 6 or 7 units, and you could say, listen, if we wanted to buy a deed restriction on your property so that you rented those to only meet the affordable housing criteria, what would the math work out to be? And you could basically pay the owner to buy that deed restriction and record that on the land records for the 40-year term.
This is a common problem. I happened to land a couple of weeks ago on a Community Voice show that shows a group, a sort of an ad hoc group for Marlboro, Hebron, and Columbia, I think it was, looking at affordable housing, and they referenced the Saybrook project several times during that time because they all are facing the same problems with septic, particularly. And one of the things they said, and I don't know if it was Saybrook or another town, but they were talking about how they're getting desperate about their demographics, something about like graduating 60 seniors and signing up 30 kindergartners last year, and it's getting that bad, you know, as far as the demographic, you know, getting older and fewer kind of thing.
Yeah, it's not an uncommon concern. A lot of towns are kind of dealing with that. Another issue to contend with. I mean, family sizes are getting smaller across the board. But if you have only one type of housing stock and falls into one price category, it's hard to capture those new families if they, you don't necessarily have what they're looking for. And so that diversification in the variety of the housing stock, single family attached, condos, single family detached, rentals, whatever, really makes the housing stock overall stronger, and you hope to keep, you know, the community at least at the size it's at now.
Cost of living is also driving down house size and family size as well. I mean, there's a lot of variables, you know, it's not just housing costs, it's everything.
Okay, so what, right now there are two places, and it's listed in the special permit in the rural mixed use zone and the gateway mixed use industrial zone. And it says if you says that one of the special permit uses is a multifamily complex, and that as part of that, you have to have 20% affordable units. That's the way it's written in the codified regulations right now. It's just those two places for inclusionary zone.
Yep.
As part of my commissioner required training, I took a course in that was about affordable housing, and it was different from other courses that I'd taken on this. And it said that once upon a time, there was this natural mix of housing in residential areas, one family, two family, three family, four family. And it was smaller developers could handle it. And then the federal government started pushing single family housing in residential zone. And that was in the 20s. And Bolton didn't get zoning until 1951, I think, something like that. And so the idea that you only had single family housing was already underway in the R1 zone. And what he was saying was that the answer really isn't more big multifamily developments, which is what we saw a lot of today, and gives us a lot of things to think about. It's letting the smaller developers do smaller projects in throughout the residential zone is the way to approach it, and then you don't have, you're doing it without mandates. It's all being done in the market, and it just works because there's demand for it, and somebody will find a way to do it. So I think there's a lot of different approaches that we could take in our zoning regulations to encouraging a more diverse mix of housing.
Yeah, I think you saw what you saw tonight because Mike was asked the question about apartments and that style of housing, not necessarily single family housing. And just, we've had these regulations in place for not only the 20% inclusionary, and we've never had an application for that since I've been here anyway. And, anybody can come in and propose an 830G as long as they meet the health code. And we've never had anybody do that either. And I don't know if that's a function of land cost in town, because it could be. But, those things are available to developers currently. When Mike did his project on Loomis, Mike McNacki, we talked to him about affordable housing, and maybe he would do it as an affordable six units or, 20% of them or whatever. And he ran the numbers, and he looked at the whole yearly evaluation. And I think he decided it was easier to do it the way he was doing it and probably cheaper for him in the long run. So that's why he proposed it the way he proposed it. So it's not that it's not available. It's certainly available to those people who want to try it. It's maybe cost ineffective in Bolton. I don't know.
I can't get my mind off of the drive-in. There was a development that was proposed now probably eons ago, maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And it all came down to septic and water. And the developer was saying that he'd have to make such a small project that it could not be cost effective. Has technology changed that much in septic treatment that it would allow the old Saybrook one? Because that drive-in would seem to be a really ideal place, and I believe it's still for sale.
So I would say yes, technology has changed somewhat. It's a function of how long you wait for an approval and how long you have, because every day you wait is going to cost a developer money. And we've had a couple, I don't know how long ago you're talking about, Marilee, but we've had a couple of interested developers, not sure how serious they were, but they claim to have done the soil studies and whatever for septic. And, you know, they were talking about 200 to 400 units on that piece. And again, never got to that point. And I think you're right. I think it is still for sale.
I think that one had a lot of backlash through the town.
Which I can't understand because they have no neighbors except for DOT, you know, kind of thing. And they're so central to services such as transportation. It just ticks off a lot of points.
I mean, that's a perfect, it's a perfect 830G if somebody wanted to propose it, just because of the property. And like you said, Marilee, it's really got no neighbors. It is sitting on the bus line. So you've got public transportation. But we can't seem to, I've had two people interested in since.
Didn't that hit a wetlands hurdle too, Patrice?
There's wetlands on the property, but I don't think they interfere with the development of the site as much as you'd think.
Okay.
If people have other questions or other ideas, you could send them to staff and, but thank you, Mike. That was a very good presentation.
Anytime.
Okay, let's see. Next on the agenda is discussion possible decision on bond release request, site improvement bond for Dollar General.
Right, so last we left that we weren't going to go do anything until spring, and we went back and looked at the bond amount that's being held based on a request by Matt. I can't say his last name. I think it's Ucolito. We are holding currently $21,078.56 of a bond on that site. Excuse me. Since then, they have completed their drainage ditch and as-built plans and have the okay from Joe Dillon on that. And when he went out to do his last inspection, he did notice that there was some landscaping that was problematic. Basically on the berm, there were some trees that were dead. And so I think Mike went out there as well. And what was agreed to with Garrett Holmes, who is holding the bond, is that we would meet on site in the spring, decide what trees needed to be replaced and with what, and have them do that work and hold a bond for that work until we're sure that the trees will stay alive. And in that case, in looking at this and talking to Joe and looking at the original bond that was held for landscaping, we decided that $10,000, holding $10,000 of that $21,000 would cover that work. So what staff would ask is that we release, I think it's in the motion, but we release everything except the $10,000, hold on to the $10,000 for review in the spring, have them do their planting, and then we'll wait to release the last of the bond once we're assured that the plantings are going to survive.
Okay. I make a motion to reduce the Garrett Holmes site improvement bond from $21,078.56 to $10,000, which will be retained post site improvements associated with 1100 Boston Turnpike that has not been completed as requested by Garrett Holmes LLC and is reviewed and approved by town engineer Joseph Dillon. Is there a second?
I second it, Jim Cropley.
Second, Jim Cropley. Is there any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, I will I will call the roll. Merrily?
Aye.
Kawan?
Aye.
Diane? Diane votes aye. We can see that. Tom Robbins?
Aye.
Jim Crockley?
Aye.
Jeremy Flick?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye.
So that is unanimous 7-0. Oh.
Okay, five, new business. 2024-25 biennial appointment to Capital Regional Council of Government Planning Commission. Regional Planning Commission. I'm currently appointed to that.
And I'm willing Rodney to Fournier, who is your alternate, who is no longer on the Planning and Zoning Commission.
So we should have the member and the alternate. And I would be just as happy to switch positions if anybody else is interested in representing us there. It's quite interesting. There's a lot going on in the Capital Region, both in transportation, housing. They run into a lot of other towns run into a lot of different issues that we might not, but you know, it gives you some ideas and some approaches. And there are some things, for instance, when we did the incentive housing overlay zone, that was something that I'd learned about through Home, Connecticut, which I brought to the commission. So there's a lot that's just interesting, but there's some of it that we can use.
Just, I don't know if you all opened the email, but they meet four times a year, basically quarterly, March, June, September, and November. It's a Thursday evening. Does they meet at 7, Tom? Is that right?
Yes, and it's all virtual.
It's all virtual. Okay. Do you have any, how are the meetings an average, you know, hour, 2 hours?
Well, hour and a half. And also as part of them recently, we have been getting training.
I would be an alternate.
So are we looking for nominations at this point?
Yes, or volunteers.
You don't have to necessarily nominate. I think if the commission can agree on a member and an alternate position to fill, that's fine. You could put it in a motion, I think. But I don't think you have to go through the nominating process like you do when we do chair and all that.
Well, no one else. I would.
Ready, Kwa? Ready to make a motion, Kwa?
Well, who's volunteering?
I guess it would be good to know who would be interested. And I guess I have the meeting dates up. It looks like March 21st, June 18th, September 19th, and November 21st.
Yes, and I've said that I'm willing to continue, and Jim Crockley has said that he would be willing to be an alternate.
Do we need that in the motion?
Yeah, or consent. However you want to do it.
The motion is good.
I'll make a motion that Tom Manny and Jim Promptly be our representatives at CRIC. Prague.
I second that motion.
Prague. Jeremy, you seconded?
I second, yeah.
All in favor say aye.
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 Mr. Chair, before I vote, could I actually put in a request? My understanding from the literature is that information from CROG meetings are only sent to the main representative and the alternate. I would ask if that information when can also be sent to the entire committee as well.
I have no problem with that.
Okay, I vote aye.
And I just to follow up to that, do they send it by everything via email?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, item number six, ongoing discussion, open subdivision and zoning regulations.
So, we had some questions to answer. From my outlook here, from the codification people, which I sent with what were our answers in red. And Tom, you said you had a
in 415-16.4G, the codifiers had asked if there was a missing word. Because it says made on and then goes on to talk about the requirements of the town clerk for filing. And I believe that the missing word is media, because the town clerk has specific requirements for the material and size of the paper, basically, Mylar, that the anything can be filed on. And there was a suggestion about making in the format from staff that that the words be in the format required by the town clerk. But I think that we set the format of what's on the drawings. Things like it has to have a title block, has to have the north arrow, has to have scale. All those format things are things that we require. It's the media that the town clerk requires, and I think that's the missing word.
Okay, so you instead of saying which meets the requirements for filing in the office of the town clerk shall be made and presented to the commission, you wanted to say just add the word on media.
Right.
Okay. Did you want to go through any of these others? Did people?
I had some more comments.
With regard to the questions or something else?
No. With regard to something else.
Okay. So just for the sake of the questions, are the rest of the question answers okay to tell them?
Yes.
Actually, I have a question on number six. So I was a little unsure what the question we were actually trying to address, or what the overall point that we were trying to mitigate here. So when I looked at sections, 18.5 and 18.6, and that obviously did not seem to be the appropriate reference. And I actually kind of agree with the original suggestion of 18.4E and F as a resolution versus what is on 18.11, assuming that is page or section 18, page 11, which kind of refers to, let me just quickly go back to my notes here. So on 1811, you have 18M, 18N is Nancy, and 18O is an Oliver. 18M to me refers to a material. 18N is to me a characteristic of a sign. An 18-0 is an activity which can happen to a sign. So I wasn't really sure if the question pertained to a reference of how it should be changed, or if a sign should be actually considered a particular type.
Is that the one about the flags?
Yeah.
Yes. So the original section 18E and 18F refer to permanent and temporary signs.
Yeah, I think the reference in the final language, it just says it can't obstruct your sight lines, basically. And the flags are permitted, but you can't obstruct the sight lines. That's the upshot of the change, I believe.
Right, and I think it covers that if you have 450-18-11. I think that answers that. So that's why I said eliminate the other references. So I don't know what you all want to do, but
I thought the final form was correct as you responded.
Okay. Are you okay with that, Kwan?
I just wasn't clear what the point of contention was to even have that in there. I didn't know what the question we were trying to address was.
Yeah, she just
it was,
didn't.
It was sort of convoluted.
I'm sorry, Tom, what was that?
It was sort of convoluted, I agree.
Okay.
But I think it cleared it up on the final word.
All right, so we'll answer that other question with inserting media, and I'll leave the rest of the answers as they are.
Yes.
Okay. And you said you had other questions, Tom?
Are all the other ordinances being codified in the same format?
Eventually, yes.
Okay, so that's...
They're waiting for, so they're doing all the ordinances, I don't think the charter, the ordinances and all the regulations. So planning, zoning, subdivision, and inland wetlands are all going to be codified in the same format, same numbering system. I don't know what they're waiting for, but since we were starting to work on the zoning regulations, I just asked if they could get through the zoning regulations so we could continue to do what we want to do with them. And she said, sure. Because we were sort of under the thinking of that we had to wait for everything to be done, and that wasn't the case. So she said, no problem.
Okay, now, are these going to get put up online? Because, I've worked with other municipalities where it's like this.
Yes.
So it's a little bit more interactive. For instance, when you're in the in the contents and you see something you want, you just click it. It takes you to that section.
Correct. It's linked.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Exactly.
That's good. Okay. Let's see. I did notice that there were some format mismatches. For instance, 450-8.3b2, which is a listing of all the special permit uses, and 450-9.2b2 are formatted in a different way. One has, everything that's listed has its own A, B, C, D, and the other one it doesn't. I think it makes it a little easier to refer to something if you've got the number or the letter in front of it.
Yeah, let me just take a look at
I didn't write down what page they're on.
Here we go. Nope. Oh boy. I'm sorry, I'm on a strange computer here tonight, so I'm having trouble finding stuff.
I guess my point is everything should be formatted the same way.
Okay. And what were the two sections you were specific? You said 9.2b2, 450.
8.3b2.
8.3b2, and that's right. And the 9.2b2 is also?
Yes.
Those two. Okay. All right, I will take a look when I can.
They're just different. They're just different. But I think it should all be the same one.
Okay.
And I noticed that some of the definitions had been eliminated, like dock was eliminated. I'm guessing it was never used. The term dock was never used as a.
I'm going to guess yes. Does she explain it in a comment?
No, I didn't notice that.
Okay.
Because I think that's important. If it's not if the term is never used, it shouldn't be in the list of definitions. And I also noticed that there were some duplicate definitions for which, for instance, we have both duplex and dwelling two family. I think we should just use the same. If we've got one term to mean one thing, we should just use it consistently throughout.
So dwelling two family is a residential building containing only two dwellings. Oh, you're talking, the definition isn't there, but oh yes, it is.
Duplex. Yes, it is, but we also
same as dwelling two family.
We also use duplex. I think we should eliminate the use of the word duplex and just use one term.
For one term?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I also see both accessory.
So this is going to take a little bit more time then. So you're saying basically take the word duplex out and call anything that refers to duplex as a two family.
Right.
Or
multifamily. Okay.
Sorry?
Or multifamily.
Well, a duplex is two.
Yeah, they're considered multiple at over three or more. Right. So it's one and two family and then three or more.
Okay. What was the term you were said you couldn't?
Doc.
You were trying. Doc. D-O-C?
D-O-C-K, doc.
Well, does that refer to docks in water?
Yeah.
We use a lot of docks, don't we?
But do we use the term in the regulation? No.
Piers, wharves, what do we use?
Okay, I'll look. And then, okay, so I've finally gotten into this thing. So now I'm in 8.5 article, that's 9. So you said 8.3b.
8.3b2 and 9.2b2. They both refer to the special permit. Special permit uses.
8.3. So this is under our 8.3B.
I think that's the rural mixed use zone special permit uses.
Yeah. What? But which?
And every state. Every special permit use that has an A, B, C, D like that down the left-hand side, right?
Yes.
Okay, now go to 450-9.2B2, which is the gateway mixed use industrial zone special permit uses listing.
And there's nothing. No, that's prohibited. That's prohibited. And then, okay, I see what you're saying. So you're saying they should either all have A, Bs, and Cs, or they shouldn't.
Right.
So what is it? What is it happens in the other zones then? Let me just look at them. Because everything requires a special permit.
Yeah, I think 92B2 is the odd man out.
Well, okay. Yeah, because 8.2, that's what we just talked about. Yeah, okay, then there's ABCs and the one before that. Okay, so it's just really that 9B2, 9.9.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And I had some comments that we won't talk about tonight because it's policy versus codification. But the one thing that I did think ought to come out now is any reference to the incentive housing overlay zone. Because it takes up a lot of space. It's got, it has a whole report attached to the end as an appendix. And it's never been adopted. You know, it was a special state program, and we got some money to rewrite the regulations, but then they never came through with the money to actually build the housing.
So you're not talking about the architectural design guidelines.
No, I think it's the very last thing in the
right, the Route 44 incentive housing zoning study.
Right. I think that can come out, and I think that any reference to incentive housing overlay zone can come out of the regulations because it's just not part of the, we never adopted it.
Okay.
And as a formatting, some of the reports like the design guidelines, there's landscape, but they're shown portrait. I think anything that's published online should be rotated so that you can read it without turning your head. That's just.
She did include that, right? Yeah. Okay. So it is backward. Okay. Okay.
And those are all my formatting comments. It's a good job.
It's a big job. Big set of regulations to do that too. Okay. Does anybody else have any comments?
Jim Croppy. No, the only nice thing I think is when they're done, it'll be much easier to use than what we currently have.
Because yes.
What we currently have now is just, I mean, even in our own meetings, when you start rambling off 45.265, you know, it's just mine. So I think it's going to be a really good thing. And I know it took a lot of heart, but I think it's going to be definitely well worth it.
Okay. I can offer these changes to them. I don't know if they can make them quick enough and get them to me for February, but I would say this, if you want to set the hearing for February and it's done by then we'll have the hearing. If it's not done by then, or hasn't been up for enough time or something like that, I think we could just open the hearing, hear what people have to say, and then continue it if you want to do it that way.
I don't think it's that onerous. I mean, they might have other work that comes first.
I don't think it is either, but we're not their only customer.
Yeah.
Patrice, how long does it have to be up?
Well, by the time the newspaper goes in, so probably just a couple weeks prior to, but I've got to send it to CROG And so in sending it to them, what I may do is try and see if I can find the things I need out of there and send it to them that way. But they ask for 35 days or 30 days. We have just that if I send it tomorrow. They're usually quicker than that.
Yeah, so we could just do that. We could schedule it for February, and if it's not, we can just table it or just hear comments, right?
Well, you'd continue the public hearing, sure.
Right.
Does that sound like a fair enough?
Yep.
All right, then I have a motion. I make a motion to hold a hybrid public hearing on Wednesday, February 14th, 2024, beginning at 7:30 p.m. virtually and at 2222 Bolton Center Road to consider updates and amendments to the zoning regulations, which include a complete reorganization of the regulations to improve functionality and usability, updates to the chapter, article, and section numbering format, 3 minor non-substantive changes to improve consistency amongst the use of terms and resolve document conflicts. Is there a second?
I second that motion.
And Jeremy Flick seconds. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, I will call the roll. Marilee?
Aye.
Kawan?
Aye.
Diane? She says aye. Tom Robbins?
Aye.
Jim Cropley?
Aye.
Jeremy Flick?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye.
Okay, so 7-0. Okay. All right.
And is there any correspondence?
There was no correspondence. Your next meeting will be the start of your regular meetings. This was a special meeting. And that meeting is February 14th.
Hey, Patrice, do we have to say anything about that motion in regards to if they're not ready for us yet? Or is that just...
No. No, we'll just start it. And if that's the case at the start of the public hearing, we'll make that mention. If people still want to offer their comments, that's fine.
Okay.
Thanks, so for asking.
Absolutely.
Okay, we won't have your comment because it's Valentine's Day, so we won't have to worry about that. Mr. Chairman, I move we adjourn.
I second.
Second, Jeremy Flick. All in favor say aye.
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 Happy New Year, y'all.
You too. I have 8:39.
8:39.
Mr. Chairman, could you do me a favor? And,